A couple things before we start this episode. Firstly, it was a complete shit show and took me ages to edit, so that's why it's getting up late. So apologies about that. Secondly, it was a shit show because of disconnections, Doubleton had to leave early, etc. So watch out for those, but they only really disrupt the show in the last third. And thirdly, we are launching or putting out this podcast late, so we will not be talking about the Steam box because we were essentially recording days before any of that was announced, but expect a full rundown of all three of Valve's announcements, assuming they get all three out this week, in next week's show. Cheers. Welcome to the Scotchcast, the Giant Bomb Guild Wars 2 community's off-topic podcast. I'm your host, Alpha Cynic, and this week I am brought to you by Squarespace, the online all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. But also with me today is Thorwaldton.
I don't want to be on this podcast anymore.
Damn. Durin is also here. How are you doing?
Wait, you're kidding, right? We're not...
No.
This fucking thing is not really sponsored by Squarespace, is it?
We in trouble for that by saying it is?
Probably. I don't know. Whatever. We're off the rules today. Do you guys check out the latest Bombcast? Are you pro advertising or not pro advertising in Bombcasts?
So, okay. I'm as I think you guys are as well. I am, a premium member on Giant Bomb.
Yes, that is correct.
And I loaded it up and I saw the comments talking about the commercial, and so there was oddly a lot of request for a commercial-free premium version, which mm-hmm. they did.
Yeah, they did.
They did upload a commercial, and it's so fucking weird. Like, it's literally one commercial, and it's not even a commercial. It's Jeff promoting something in his dumb announcer voice.
Yeah.
Like, trying not to crack up the whole time. And people are so fucking against ads that they don't even want an ad that isn't really an ad.
Well, I think that's a minority because I put up a poll for it, right? And the vast majority of the responses were either Jeff's radio voice is hilarious, which is absolutely true, or what's his face? Yeah, they're fine with it. Like, most premium members are just sticking to the normal version.
As long as that's how the ads are presented, I don't see the need to hop over to some fucking elitist premium version.
I thought it was absolutely hilarious. The fact that they had the Nintendo download music in the background was the single best thing. I'm just happy that was very endearing.
I enjoyed that.
Thorwaldton, what are your thoughts? Are you against podcast ads?
I'm not against them as long as they don't become too invasive. There's a couple podcasts I listen to that, The Shaft, for example, a Minecraft podcast that has been running for a long time.
Right.
Has three or four ads in it, but the way they present it and it's done for each segment sort of thing, they do a good job of, okay, here's the jokey part where we talk about the ad, but then we're going to move on to the content.
I think
Jeff's non-serious way of talking about it helps a lot.
It's great because it's serious, but also clearly not serious. Because if he was doing that on, because he does that, 2-minute thing for CBS every, a couple of weeks, right? Mm-hmm. So if he does, he's doing it in that voice, his crazy radio DJ voice. So if he just took the clip of the ad, it'd be perfectly marketable. But the fact that it's that and then surrounded by the Bombcast makes it, the biggest... An awesome joke that I could not stop laughing.
Ending to it where Drew is yelling about his mic being muted is the best.
Oh man. Yeah, and the mid show one worked out well. As long as it doesn't get because MBMBAM, my brother and Brian Brother and me with Justin McElroy and Griffin McElroy, etc. Travis McElroy. That is a podcast that's 45 minutes long and it's got 5 minutes of ads. And that is, I stopped listening to it. It's just got too much for me. But this is a 3-hour to sometimes 4-hour podcast And they put in like 2 minutes of ads in the whole thing. I'm perfectly fine with it. It's cool. But it was really it was a huge shock to me when I first heard that because.
Yeah.
Like it's been like 4 years of Bombcast. And obviously there's Ryan in his own style and Jeff is with his different style. But hearing this was just like, holy shit, things have changed. And that was, definitely a moment. Anyway. We're not actually sponsored by Squarespace.com. But it's, hey.
Okay.
You know what?
But my check is in the mail, right?
Bombcast 9, use it on Squarespace and the Bomb Crew will probably get paid. I don't know. But yeah, I'm Selfish Cynic. Thurbleton's over there. Durin's over there. I can't actually see them. I'm pointing to a proverbial table right now. We are going to be talking about off-topic shit. No Guild Wars 2, probably, unless Thurbleton wants to talk about Guild Wars 2. Starting with what we've been playing. Who wants to go first? Durin?
Do you want me to go first?
I did some short amount of pre-podcast planning. You did Final Fantasy XIV and Amnesia. Thurbleton, what have you been playing? Just give me a general synopsis.
I've been playing Crazy Work Week, so whenever I am home, I'm usually in this weird headspace where my brain isn't right.
Yep, okay.
But I played some Super Hot.
Okay, yep, all right.
It's a game that came out of the same game jam that Receiver was born from, so right. It's this really cool, I guess, best description is a turn-based first-person shooter.
That is an interesting description. Okay, so you win already. You're next. So you go first.
Okay.
What have you been playing, Thurbleton? Super Hot? I want to hear about Super Hot.
Well, I've been playing this game called Super Hot. It's a turn-based first person.
I don't know if that's entirely... It's crazy. It's a new style because Patrick played it on that... What's his face? One of his worth playings or what might have been worth jamming. One of the two. It was like based on 10 seconds, if it's one.
See, I haven't actually seen Patrick play it. I haven't fully watched this week's worth playing, so it could be in there.
No, it was like a couple of weeks ago. But it was one of those. But that was like the earlier version of it. So it didn't have like, it didn't progress level to level. He had to click a button because it's on a website and just running through Unity. And he had to use surf the website to get to the next level when he played it. But not the wrapper. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That. Okay. I played some of that too, Thurb.
Oh, really?
I clicked your link and I checked it out.
Yeah. Basically, I found out about it through the Creighton Crowbar group. That's like the old PC Gamer UK podcast.
Mm.
And they a lot of people were talking about it. It's a very neat game. One of the most endearing facts about it is that when you try to explain it to people, you just say, "Hey, just go to this website. You don't have to download anything."
Yeah.
It just runs off the Unity engine in the web browser.
Yeah. It's really, really slick how much like Unity is integrated into everything now. It's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. And what it is that it's almost reverse bullet time. A lot of people use to describe it. It's time is normally is slowed when you're standing still. And whenever you move, time speeds up. So it's... managing how often you use those WSAD controls.
Yeah.
I believe looking
actually,
around...
Actually, it's not even just... Yeah, looking around also does do it.
What, does it move time looking around?
Yes.
Yeah, it not as much as walking around, but there is definitely a difference between standing still and not looking and standing still and looking.
All right. Okay. Sure. And it's got this really... because they also played on Unpressure Fridays today. Well, we're recording this on Friday the 20th or something. Drew was playing it. So he played the new pretty version with all the wrapper and stuff. And it's just really sparse. It looks like Mirror's Edge, just white and red. I didn't see any other colors in there. I think it looks pretty cool. It's weird because the character models, everything is low poly and it looks like a game jam game. But I really like the...
Hey, Cynic. That's because it's a game jam game.
Exactly. But I still really like the look of it. And I love the stupid FMV shit they put at the end. Did you guys finish it?
Yeah, no, I didn't. At first, I thought the third level, because there are in fact four levels, and what's the last one, there's stupid FMV shit.
Yeah.
But I thought the third level was this infinite thing. And maybe when I tried it last week, it sort of was infinite.
Right, maybe. But
you're just like in this atrium.
Exactly. But
yeah, there is a final level with really dumb story.
So for the few people out there who I assume haven't seen it, you've been painted the giant bomb stuff. So the basics of it, as they said, is when you move, time goes faster. When you stay still, blah, blah, blah. But the main point is you start most levels without a gun. If you walk into a dude, your dude like insta-gibs them and takes their gun. If you walk over a gun, you grab the gun. And guns only usually have like 1 to 4 shots in them, or less sometimes. So you have enemies who are shooting at you. You have this weird inverse bullet time. There's usually cover to use, but it's about managing your movement and your ammo, or if in case when you're not having a gun, managing your distance from them because you're trying to close to them to get the gun off them. And so it's like this crazy movement puzzle of like slipping between bullets in pseudo bullet time and also progressing forward. But it's stupid because if you just like walk up to them, they kind of just explode into jibs, or like their body falls to the ground. There's like blood everywhere. But because time is slowed, if you stay still, the blood's like stopped in midair and stuff. Like they stick to their premise really nicely, and it's a really cool premise because it may sound simplistic, but if you start looking at like a combat puzzle, it works out really cool as you play more.
Yeah, I think the best example of it is the second level, in which it's just you're at one end of a hallway, there's three guys at the other end of the hallway, and there's a gun in the middle that you have to get to.
Yeah.
And so like the whole time you're having to move, but if you'd run straight for the gun, they're gonna shoot straight towards you. So you have to like juke from side to side and sort of make them overcompensate your movements and shoot like around you.
Yeah. And
it's very much like a very Matrix kind of feel to it.
Oh, definitely. Like it's when you're stopping still, like bullets, it's not absolutely zero time. Bullets are still moving really slowly towards you. So if you stop, it looks like a screen grab of the Matrix. There's bullets flying towards you very slowly.
Yeah.
And it's very beautiful art style. It's just, yeah, it's really impressive. But my favorite thing about that game is when you're empty on the when your gun's empty, you click it again, he just fucking throws the gun at the dude. And that's the best. I don't know if you can kill someone with it. I haven't seen anyone successfully even contact someone with the thrown gun, but it was pretty funny. Yeah, cool. Thurbs, what else have you been playing? Or is there any more like things from that? Do any more impressions from Super Hot?
No, I've been looking into some of the stuff. Like I've been enjoying Patrick's content on the 10-second game jam. I'm not sure the name of it, but yeah, like some of those, as well as the experimental game pack I mentioned to a friend.
Right.
So I might try some of those dumb stuff.
Nice.
But there's the only other game on the side. Yeah, the only other game I've been playing is I sort of kind of bought GTA 5.
Oh, me and Durin had this like long discussion before the show because neither of us have bought GTA 5. I was talking about why I didn't want GTA 5, and Durin was talking about like why it's still relevant essentially today. Because my essential argument about it is I'm not sure if I could play those characters today, and I don't feel that particularly relevant to me. But we didn't want to talk about it in the show because neither of us have actually fucking touched it. Have you popped it in yet?
Yeah. After saying on a certain podcast that I probably wouldn't buy it and several reasons why.
Yeah.
I basically like because all I'd seen was just like the really well-crafted story trailers that Rockstar put out.
Right.
And based off their previous titles of like, hey, if you want to do multiplayer, you have to do it on a console and pay money. So I kind of got it knowing I wouldn't be doing any of the multiplayer because for some reason, I don't know why, I just don't want to give money to Xbox. So purely for the single player.
So you're playing on 360. And
because I don't have a PS3.
Right.
I was sold on the single player by watching Danny O'Dwyer of GameSpot's snippets of his 12-hour live stream where he didn't do any of the story beats. Like he barely did any of those. He just drove around in the world and that world, it's like you're driving around in L.A., but it's not L.A.
Right. It's
Rockstar's take on L.A. And
have you been
awesome.
To L.A.? Like, did that? Is it working for you or what?
I have not been to L.A., but I've seen L.A. Like, I've seen snippets of L.A. and all that. I do live on the West Coast, so
mm-hmm.
I guess that makes, I don't know.
But it still feels like a realized city.
Yeah, it feels like a real city is the thing.
That's, yeah.
Which is kind of creepy, but it's maybe like, okay, there's two mindsets where I'm driving around and I'm not trying to kill anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a mindset where a mini game that I play is if I hear a song I like, I will immediately try and get as many stars as possible and then live to the end of the song.
Nice. Nice.
So like straddling the line of madman trying to get himself killed and trying not to die.
That's pretty cool.
So that's been fun.
Yeah.
Other than that, like I can't talk much about the heists only because I am planning the first one now.
Oh, okay.
It seems neat, but
So have you met Trevor yet?
No, I have not.
Okay. So this, okay. So Trevor is the dude I would want to play as, and I find
Trevor seems like the guy that is the most like the newest of this game. Whereas, right. What I mean when I say that is. Franklin seems a lot like San Andreas GTA,
mm-hmm.
and
Michael,
yeah, seems a lot more like thrown back to GTA Vice City or maybe like the GTA 3.
Yeah, he's like, what if those characters grew old?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I definitely see that. Whereas Trevor is just batshit hillbilly crazy, and that is totally – I don't know, it doesn't speak to me, but it's the kind of person who I would like – I find myself – laughing at the crazy shit he's doing, like because like they showed it during the quick look, whenever they cut to Trevor he'd be doing something crazy, and I like that was just my kind of stupid. But yeah, how do you feel? Like I actually thought because there was three main characters that they'd do the thing where you could pick which to start from and then you from that perspective meet the other two, but what they chose to do instead was have everyone start as Franklin. How do you think of that? What did you feel about that?
I mean, like it's only seeing one side of the story right now. I haven't finished the other end of it. It seems to be neat. My one reservation with it is just it seems like they want me to do three times as much gameplay to work on skilling them all up.
Yeah,
which like I don't want to do that, and I wonder if that will be an issue later on in the end game,
right?
As it were, like at the end of the story, if like, oh well, you can't. It's hard to get this last heist done because you never bothered like working on Michael's
driving
stamina meter.
Yeah,
you only played Franklin or something.
Yeah,
I
could.
So I don't know if that's gonna be an issue later on, but I'm worried.
It's gonna be interesting because like they. The heists are definitely based upon statistics of the people you hire. I wonder how much they also based upon your statistics and whether you influence that. It's kind of cool seeing how that game totally breaks down because they are doing some stuff in it that haven't been done before, which I find kind of interesting. How do you like multiple protagonists? Do you find yourself switching between them very often or?
They do a good job of making like it's a multi-threaded story sort of thing. Like it's an interesting playing a game with three protagonists that you're actively playing as instead of one protagonist or something. Yeah. It's not like it sort of plays on that silent protagonist thing and that it's instead you're having three people talk to each other and it's, you can write those lines a lot better, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, probably.
Planning for that mindset, I guess, knowing that you have three different people that you'll be playing as, three different like characters, you can start playing off that in a soliloquy fashion, I guess.
Right. Well, so I brought up the three character thing, and I may as well bring up the show since you actually have played it. So I find it difficult to play. And having seen multiple like video streams of this game now, I feel that I will have this difficulty. I have a difficulty playing a gangbanger. I'm not saying I don't want to play as a black man. I'm Indian, so I don't really have a problem with colored skin. I'm talking about, I don't like the representation of him and his friends and his parents and his lifestyle. I don't like the fact that he, like at the start, he's working at that used car or that car place. And the fact that his boss is this like a very stereotypical accented dude and of a very particular stereotype, like an archetype that is very well recognized. His friend is a very archetypical person as well. And I just, it's that element of Rockstar writing, of playing with stereotypes and archetypes that I can't see myself enjoying, especially in that context. Because, at least from my perspective, the immediate reaction I had, which is incorrect now in retrospect, but the immediate reaction I had, which is something you don't want with a game, is that's kind of racist. Like, I started playing as Franklin, and as soon as he opened his goddamn mouth and started talking, I was like, why the fuck does he have, like, a proper, like, gangbanger-ass gangbanger accent? When
it was kind of annoying when I was playing it during the day, I think like Wednesday or Thursday or whatever, my roommate was doing laundry, and so she'd be walking out of her room going to our laundry room in the basement, and every time she walked by on the big screen, I was playing as Franklin, and he was just doing something that was just like, oh man, this is not a good like representation of the, like, this is just a black dude doing black dude stuff.
Yeah. And
it seems like I'm weird playing this game.
Exactly. And I don't, and seeing,
it's kinda
like
it's kind of like when you're, if you were like driving down the road, listening to some like hardcore fucking gangster rap as the person that you are with your windows down, and you stop at a red light and the person next to you just kind of stares at you.
That's exactly the feeling.
Yeah.
And
so
yeah.
you make a valid point there, and I believe some people, like some of the reviews have come out that have, like, you know, sort of questioned Rockstar of, like, do you guys have to do this with your games, or can you sort of tone it down a little bit,
or just like play with it, like why isn't the black dude the affluent rich ex bank robber, or like that kind of stuff? Like, it's just the interesting choices, or the, not really interesting, but the specific and very intentional choices they made of playing to the textbook archetype and stereotype, which is part of their storytelling. Like, that's what Rockstar has always done. That's what they want from these games. They play to these themes to pretty much make a statement about America as a whole. At least that's how I understand it from an external perspective, because I don't particularly like GTA. So I know that that's what they're going for, but to me, it's like, the whole industry is kind of moved forward in a lot of ways, and I find this type of commentary and this type of perspective on it kind of like outdated. I find like this is something that was designed in 2005 and then gestated for that period but didn't change with the times between then and now, right? And that's kind of how I see it. I don't know. But hey. That's just me. Do you like GTA 5, Thurbleton?
I give it a 9 out of 10.
After 5 hours? Yeah, sure. 9 out of 10. Absolutely. Oh, man. Seeing like the reactions to anyone who scored it under like a 9.5 have been pretty... Well, it always happens, right? It always happens. But...
Yeah, on a real number scale... in which you can't do points, yeah, 9 out of 10.
Hmm. Cool. All right, so far. Nice.
The best I can do that's not Half-Life 2.
Or 3, because Valve was having that thing on Monday, right? God damn it.
It's not going to be 3.
There were three buttons
on the controller, so it's definitely Half-Life 3, you guys.
Oh, my God.
So here's the thing, though. They said that they're going to expand the like Valve universe, which means it's probably just a new IP.
That would be awesome.
What? If Valve makes it...
Or they're going to do a double announcement, and it's going to be Half-Life 3 and Left 4 Dead 3, because we already know that both those things are being worked on.
Dude, if it's Left 4 Dead 3, there's going to be some broken hearts out there. I just hope it's not Half-Life 3. If it's a new IP...
Honestly, at this point, I would much prefer to see Left 4 Dead 3 than I would Half-Life 3. Like, Half-Life 3...
Really?
To me, it's kind of gone the way of The Last Guardian. Like, it'll come when it comes, if it comes, and if it doesn't, I'm over it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's exactly how I feel about it. Well, not that I'm particularly looking forward to Half-Life 3, but as a person who, like... I'm just done with that news. I'm done with that story. I'm done with people speculating. It's just, let it happen when it happens. And until then, just fucking leave it. I don't know. What was that about? When was that announced? Like, I don't remember that story. I just remember hearing it, like, peripherally for people making Half-Life 3 jokes. So.
What story?
When was Half-Life 3 announced?
No, when did they announce that there'll be a thing on Monday for
today.
Valve? Ah. Ooh, is there a news story about that? Anyway, anything else to help us in? What else have you been doing with your time?
I am almost ashamed to say that this week at work we said Halloween and some Christmas stuff.
Oh no!
It's the and Christmas stuff that I'm pissed at. But
oh man!
They pay me to do stuff, and this is what they pay me to do. And you do
it. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Well, what is the Christmas? What have you started selling already? What's the game plan of Target?
Just like it's trimetry stuff of just like, hey, here's some lights and some wreaths and stuff.
Man, what is this weird imagery? So I'm looking at the Valve teases Steam Box and other news article done by Patrick Klepek on the website, I believe it was. Yes. And they released these images. Yeah, there is a controller and a cat with three buttons on it. And then there is, well, not the cat, but the controller. And there's like another image of one circle, a circle and a space.
No, there's a cat, and he's a hipster circle. Cat, and he's wearing a vest. It's got the vest has three buttons on it.
Oh,
and
man.
If you take the image file and load it into a music player, and then put that like in reverse with a codec, it says
Half-Life 3. Half-Life 3 confirmed.
Yeah, confirmed.
Last year, we shipped a software feature called Big Picture, a user interface tailored for televisions and gamepads, said the company on its teaser page. This year, we're working on even more ways to connect the dots for customers who want Steam in the living room. Soon, we'll be adding to our design process so that you can help us shape the future of Steam. It sounds like they're going to announce the Steam Box, maybe, or just like maybe a Steam OS. That would be crazy.
Maybe something crazy, just like a fucking controller.
just fuck it.
After all of this, they just release a fucking PC controller. Like, but it's wireless, so now you can just have your computer in your office and play using this Bluetooth controller in your living room.
You know what would be crazy? 30 feet away. You know what would be fucking crazy? If they released a controller that had like a gig of storage in it, and that gig had a Linux OS essentially just in essentially flash memory. So if you plug it via USB into any computer, you can reboot that computer into Linux OS or Steam OS essentially. That would be crazy. So you can essentially, you get the controller, you get the OS, you get the experience, any computer ever. That's what I would do if I was Steam, but they're probably going to do something even crazier. I don't know. Who knows? It's Valve.
Maybe they've created like the new wireless technology that goes even further than Bluetooth. So that you can literally just take it anywhere in your house.
You know, the gold standard of our times, Bluetooth.
Hey, you know what? Okay, Blu-ray was considered the gold standard when it beat out HD DVD, and we saw how that went.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know.
Unless Bluetooth has an app. The power of Bluetooth has enabled me to play dumb iPod games with friends, such as Space Team.
Yeah. Oh, dude, Space Team is great.
Okay. Here's what Valve has actually been doing. I have the inside scoop here.
Go.
Inside scoop. You're getting this early, even though it's probably already been announced by the time we get around to posting.
I have an uncle who has a friend who has a friend who works at Valve, and they say that they have truly unlocked the power of the cell processor.
Oh, jeez. That would be the best.
How many times did your uncle's friend of a friend get stabbed to bring us this information?
He needs to know. Nice. It was like that thing with ancient Greece, the dude running forever and then finally getting there and delivering the message. Like that, but with stabbing
exactly.
Yeah. And cell processor.
No,
there's just like multiple Gabe fashioned knives in the guy's
back. it's like a standard ninja looking throwing knife, but if you take it out and examine it, it's got Gabe Newell's head burned into the knife. Acts like poison. All right.
So how many super fucking high res pictures of this orb do you think there are floating around the internet with just conspiracy theorists just going nuts? Like trying to find things in the ink blot.
What could be found from this? It's just a fucking circle with blue shit all over it. I don't know.
It's real close. There might be a face there.
You know what? I bet someone deconstructs the JPEG image or whatever it is and finds like code or something in the actual source material for the JPEG that makes this circle. That I can see. But the actual circle itself looks fucking industry. I think the next one down with the circle and the circle in space and the circle plus circle, that means something. And 71, 17, 42, that means something as well. Someone will figure that out. They probably already have, but we couldn't be fucked looking it up because fact-checking is bad for podcasts. Durin, what have you been playing?
Well, I also put some of that. What was it? Super Hot? Was that what that was called?
Yeah, Super Hot.
Super Hot.
That was pretty cool. Hot. I will say, just quickly, the one problem I did have with that game was it was on the third level. Mm-hmm. And again, Thurb said, you know, maybe it was endless, but I didn't finish it partly, I think, because I just felt like it was just going on a little too long.
Really?
It kind of got...
Like the 15-minute game went on too long, huh?
Well, it's because the problem with like short games like that have a single premise,
right,
is they need to be short. They need to just... If that's all your game has, even if it is an incredibly interesting premise and it does have a really interesting art style... Mm-hmm. It still is capable of overstaying its welcome. And I feel like that game started to do that in level 3. It felt like it was going on a little too long. I'm like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
I've killed like 7 guys now. Can we move on?
Well, that's kind of the thing, right? Because
it doesn't move on, so I just close it.
Because Drew finished it, and apparently you have to kill 10 enemies in that level. And it actually counts down 10, 9, 8, etc. And that is too much. Like the levels before that where you're just killing maybe 3 dudes and it's interesting new environments and they're like in different places and you have to kind of figure out where they all are, get into the right position and move around cover. That is where that game shines. I think you can do a lot of levels if they're like 15, 20 seconds long warrior wear style. But if you do have those like minute, 2 minute long levels, that I can see that wearing.
Well, that level I felt like was just kind of flawed anyway, because I spent a lot of the time after I killed the initial like obvious looking dudes, I spent a lot of time just like walking around in a circle listening for where the gunshots were coming from.
Right.
Exactly. And then kind of moving over to go shoot the dude, like looking for the flashes and stuff rather than playing the game, I think, the way they intended, which is kind of slowly moving around the level.
Man, but the coolest one is there's a video of a dude who did no shots fired, no time pause playthrough of Super Hot. I don't know how he got through level 2, but apparently he just finishes the game and just runs the whole way. Because it merely is instant kill, so he just does that. I want to watch that video now.
Well, melee is instant kill, but you do have to actually hit the button. You don't just run into them.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. But yeah, other than that, I played... I'll go ahead and get it out of the way. I played Final Fantasy still. That's most of what I've done.
Thank you. Thank you for taking this approach to that conversation.
Because I know that's going to be a lot of what I've played in these shows going forward for a little while at least. So I'll keep it concise. I am now 43 out of 50.
Yep.
Dragoon. The dungeons are really, really good. They continue to be really, really good. I feel like I am starting to sort of hit a point where quests are drying up just a little bit.
Right.
We're basically, I think you're intended to kind of keep queuing for dungeons, keep doing some other things that I haven't been doing as good about doing. So I'll, like, the next story quest, I'll be, like, maybe a half a level behind. So I'll, you know, go run a dungeon, do a couple of fates, and then I'm good to go.
Right.
But I've heard that that's a problem kind of in the area where I'm at. So hopefully it doesn't continue.
How's the game progressed for you in terms of, like, have you specced into multiple classes? Are you a full proper Dragoon now? Like, how's it going?
I'm a full proper Dragoon. I got that at level 30.
Nice.
I now have a jump, which is, I mean, it's, you get that when you become a Dragoon because, of course.
How's that work in this? Is it just like a...
Basically, you fly up into the air. I guess at some point you actually just disappear.
Awesome.
But it's kind of off your screen. You fly up into the air, and then you just come crashing down on the enemy.
So even on the person who's playing the Dragoon, the character models off screen.
Yes.
That's perfect.
Yes.
That is absolutely perfect.
And literally, I've gotten 3 Dragoon abilities now. Literally every one of them is a jump. It's great. Because like the first one I got, the jump, jumps you at the enemy, hits them, and then jumps you back.
Nice.
The second one I got was a... like basically means of getting away. Mm-hmm. So basically you hit the enemy and then jump backwards. And then the third one I have is a stun where you jump into the air, hit the enemy, stun them, and stay there.
Okay. So you do 3-2 and then as your little combo, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's actually, it's really fucking fun. Like I never thought I would enjoy a class where your main weapon was a goddamn lance.
Hell yeah. But he's a DPS. Good. Like, it's a DPS. It's not like you're playing a big,
yes,
slow.
First DPS.
Yeah.
First DPS, yeah.
Yeah, so you're not really.
So I've currently been out damaging my, when we were on the same level, a friend of mine who's playing a bard, which is also a DPS class.
How's a bard a DPS class?
Because the bard is a class of the archer, or is a job of the archer.
Ah, of course.
So All right. Bard actually wields a bow.
Right. With, you know, okay.
I thought it'd be something like a siren, where like they do have these like offensive songs that like,
yeah,
put people to sleep.
That's what it was in 11.
Turn them into like crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Final Fantasy 11, it straight up was that like your weapon was like a harp.
Yeah.
Like, a little handheld harp.
Exactly.
In this game, you do still play songs. Like he has a couple songs already. But you're also a DPS class, and I think part of it is that groups in this game, like dungeon groups, are only 4-man groups, so you only have 2 DPS, a tank and a healer, which right. means you don't really have room for a support class
right.
to bring along. So like with the bard, they do have support, but if that was all they were, nobody would ever bring them in.
Yeah.
So they're also a pretty competent DPS class as well.
Nice. Wait, so when he plays music, do like giant like ethereal speakers show up and just blast it out? Like how does it? I'm hoping for interesting.
It's basically done in like a spell effect kind of way where you see like the notes coming out and stuff all
that's melodic. So dumb. I'm disappointed.
I mean, one of their ultimate weapons is a bow that is like a harp bow.
Okay, all right. Now you got me.
It's a big ass like musical instrument looking bow with a whole bunch of strings on it to make it look like a harp.
Can anyone use it or just bards?
No, just bards.
Awesome. That's perfect.
Yeah.
All right. You got me. Final Fantasy 14. So overall impressions, like, are you planning to stick with it longer, or because you're almost max level, right?
Yeah, almost max level, like 7 levels away. So yeah,
how
I definitely
take you.
Longer than it takes to get to max in Guild Wars 2.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
So you've been playing it a lot.
You can get that really fucking quick.
Yeah, but you've been that means you've still been playing this for quite.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Final Fantasy.
God damn it,
there's a reason why for the last like 2 weeks, this is the only thing I've been playing.
Oh my god! All right,
this is the first MMO that I've played with some other friends of mine who we've all played MMOs together basically since WoW, and
right.
this is the first time I've actually stayed like ahead of all of them, and yeah,
Jesus Christ, dude.
Really liking it.
Nice,
really liking it.
Nice.
Cool. I will say the die system for your gear isn't quite as good as Guild Wars 2.
Right.
Each piece only has one color that you can change.
Oh, okay. Is that variable per piece, dies, or is it always one color?
It's always one color.
Okay.
So basically, you can't change the accent colors at all. Dyes, there's not nearly as many, not even close to as many dyes as there are in Guild Wars 2.
Right.
But because it's not a free-to-play game, the dyes are bought with in-game money instead of real currency.
Okay, sure.
So,
well, at least your character no longer looks like a stripper with a lance.
That's true. She yeah. does. Yeah. Thank God.
You showed us pictures of her before the show. She just looks like she has armor now. She looks like she doesn't look like a dragoon yet, but she's getting there.
I'm getting really close to the point where you start doing quests to get your. What I called your artifact armor, which mm-hmm. is basically your signature class armor.
Yeah.
So for the Dragoon, it'll straight up be the purple and black Dragoon armor
Fuck
that you
yeah.
remember from all the old Final Fantasies. And by level 50, I'll have the full set.
Yeah. Wait, so are there different artifact armors, or does the Dragoon generally just have the one?
The Dragoon has just that one, but right. the artifact armor is not the strongest armor in the game. It's oh. basically just it's armor that you get leading up to level 50. So when you hit level 50, okay. you're going to be in full artifact, and that's what gets you ready for the end game to start actually doing that stuff and getting the even better armor.
All right. So we'll hear more about that in the future. I know you've been playing at least one more game.
Yeah. So a friend of mine was an asshole and decided he wanted to gift me Amnesia, Machine for Pigs.
Yeah.
Solely because he was watching Patrick play it
uh-huh.
on Spooky with Scoops, and Patrick wasn't moving fast enough for his liking. And he didn't feel like he was getting entertained well enough, so he bought right. the game for me so that I would stream it and play it in like 2-hour chunks.
Oh, yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
So I played the first 2 hours of that game.
Yep. How's that working out for you? All right, so warm me up. What are your feelings? Have you played the first Amnesia?
Yeah, I played a good chunk of the first one. I didn't beat it, but I did play a lot of it.
Did it terrify the shit out of you? Like, did you stop because you were terrified, or did you stop because you were bored?
I didn't stop because I was terrified. I stopped because other things came around, and it was an easy out.
Right. Nice.
But... So the second one, they made some changes to it that I actually really like for the most part.
You like them? Okay. Because there's the light. Well, the light's the biggest change, right?
Yeah, the light's the biggest change. You no longer need the tinder. Mm-hmm. And also, it's more of a flashlight now, so it actually has a forward beam.
Yeah.
Whereas before, it was a radial kind of around you.
Kind of a...
So I like that because... That's one of the resources of the last game that I didn't like as much because I felt like it forced you to play the game in the dark more often than you really needed to, especially once you realized that your character's kind of sanity that happens like supposedly breaks down while you're in the dark doesn't seem to really affect you much.
Yeah. But in this, there's no sanity. They took that out entirely, right?
And they took that out entirely. They took out, like I said, the need for tinder boxes entirely. In fact, they took out your inventory entirely.
Wow. Okay. So this is no resource management whatsoever in this one.
Nothing at all. No. And that's kind of okay because it lets you get more engrossed in the story and in the environment.
Right.
But I feel like the problem with that, like the flip side, is that because you don't have an inventory, you don't really have a need to pick things up. Which means there are like 90% less things to interact with in the environment.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Definitely.
Like to the point, there are these like ridiculous, like crazy big and ornate locks on like every dresser and every door that they don't want you to go into.
Yeah. It was kind of dumb because I thought that'd be like, okay, that's a specific kind of. Because when I saw that, I was like, all right, so that's a specific kind of door. You'll get a thing that lets you get through that kind of door. But no, you just never see them again.
It's basically become Silent Hill.
Yeah, exactly. Like
every third door you might be able to open.
Did you play Dear Esther? Because this is made by the same people.
Yeah, I did. Oh, yeah. I played the original. I didn't play the new one.
Okay, yeah. And we talked about it like to the last episode, whenever that was. And
something I never thought to suggest to listeners is something that I've actually I've still yet to actually play the game. Mm-hmm. I just watch it on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I still feel that's okay having paid for the game.
Perfectly valid way of experiencing Dear Esther.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, because every time I try to play it, I fall asleep.
Nice. The game's beautiful and stuff, but I don't know if it's worth the... it's hard to tell. Like, you have to decide for yourself whether...
I would say pick it up on a Steam sale, because when I got it, it was like $2 or something, and for that, it's totally worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, pay the price of like a cheap movie.
But yeah, the main thing is like
extent of entertainment you're going to get out of it.
Yeah, sorry. But yeah, the main thing is Dear Esther is a non-combat experience where you're walking through a set path kind of hallway thing
with very good writing and voice work.
Yeah, and this strikes me as if it's kind of the same thing but reskinned as Amnesia. Like obviously the plot's not the same. But
not really, but there's definitely influence you can see having played Dear Esther. There, I can definitely tell there is influence there.
Yeah.
It is a lot more linear, or so far has been a lot more linear than the last Amnesia. The last Amnesia, it felt more like a Resident Evil type of game where you had a big mansion.
Yeah.
You just kind of explored, and there was progression through it, but it didn't feel like it was linear progression because you kind of did a lot of backtracking, moved through these areas to unlock new areas and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas this game has been 100% completely linear from the beginning,
and that really kind of irks me because the Chinese Room is a cool company, but I would have wished they'd branched out a little bit in their second big release. Like I would have hoped they went beyond the what would you call it, like the linear non-interactive experience, really. And that's
I mean, just it's
rail,
it's an interactive story, I guess.
Yeah, it's like a story on rails almost.
Like an interactive novel?
Sure, exactly. It's a visual novel. So yeah, I thought they'd step away from the visual novel kind of interaction. And so did you feel that affected... Like how? Okay, So run me through your experience. How do you feel about Amnesia Machine for Pigs?
The writing is incredibly good.
Yeah.
They definitely, I imagine that's where a lot of the influence, aside from maybe some level design stuff, a lot of the influence from the Chinese Room came from.
Exactly. Yeah.
The writing in Amnesia 1 wasn't terrible, but it's definitely a step up in this game. Yeah.
So I think whoever does the writing at Chinese Room is solid. That guy is.
Yeah.
Yeah, world class. So,
aside from the annoyingly locked doors everywhere, the atmosphere is incredibly well done as well. The audio is really, really good. And they do an amazing job of making you terrified of every corner, even though you haven't run into an enemy yet.
What is your opinion on the whole, like, because when I was playing games way back in the day, like Deus Ex or whatnot, there weren't locked doors. It was just like there was door A and door B, and you knew, like, okay, door B is what you use to get to the next level. And I sort of wish, like, man, it would be so much more immersive if they had more doors that were just locked, sort of thing. I don't know. And now people are like, oh, it's just a bunch of locked doors. is the illusion good, like, lifted, or?
Well, I think there's a good middle ground that some games have hit really well, but a lot don't, and this is one that doesn't. Yeah. And that is, you know, it's okay to have some locked doors or some blocked doors or what have you. But you know what really helps a lot, I feel like, with immersing the player in the environment and making you feel like you're really there in the world, is to have some rooms that literally have no purpose.
Yeah.
Like, put a couple, you know, bedrooms and some libraries in this mansion, and make it feel a little bit more like a house rather than like an entire hallway of locked doors with one on the end that will take me on to point B.
Yeah, like Guild Wars does that. It just has rooms, straight up places that don't need to be there for any other reason for existing. Or The Last of Us is the obvious example that they filled out that world with.
That's where I felt like this Amnesia took a step back, because I felt like the original Amnesia had that.
I've heard tales there. Of people who, when they played Amnesia Dark Descent, the first one, they stopped playing because they got to a point where, like, they needed a key and they've checked all these rooms and don't know which one, like, where the key is at.
Right.
So that option in game design has to be taken with some care of where to put, like, the availability of doors. Yeah. I know for me, I'll just briefly say, when I played it, I sort of got stuck in a save that I can't revert, where I have one guy approaching me from one end of the hallway, another guy approaching me from another end of the hallway.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, I've screwed myself. Every time I come out of the save, they found me.
Man.
So here's the secret I learned of Amnesia a few hours in, and it's part of the reason actually why I didn't stop playing it. The enemy AI in that game is fucking abysmal.
Yeah.
You can run past those.
Yeah.
You can actually run through the entire game and never really have to worry about an enemy.
Yeah. Like, Jesse Cox did a playthrough. That's where I saw Amnesia, because I'm a fucking pansy and I would never play that game ever. But yeah, he essentially figured that out like three quarters of the way through, and the environment and the music and the lighting definitely plays into it. So still had some element of tension, but it lost a lot of the rest of the tension because
it's one of those games where you have to put yourself in a specific mindset and kind of allow the game to scare you, because if you really break it down to its technical points a bit too much, that game falls apart in the first few minutes. I mean, when you realize that, at least in the earlier parts, the enemies, anytime there's an enemy that shows up, all you have to do is hide somewhere for a little bit, and then when the music goes away, the enemy has despawned.
Yeah, just gone. It's not like wandering around. Sometimes just gone.
They're just gone. So, like, once I learned that, like, there was no tension anymore. I was like, oh, music started up, an enemy's nearby. Yeah. Let me go hide behind this chest, and then, oh, music stopped. I'm good to just run out there now.
Yeah, which is why the sewer sequence with jumping on the boxes and the invisible enemy in the water.
That is still goddamn terrifying.
Still the single best scary sequence in a game to date, like, ever. It's
specifically the part where you are required to jump into the water and turn the goddamn valve.
Yeah. And you have to throw the pieces of meat to the other side of the room to make him go over. It's like the balance there of knowing that there's danger but not being able to see it, having all the audio cues around you, the dankness and lighting of being in a sewer, and on top of that, being in control. Like, they never took the control away from you in that part. If you're on a box, you're safe, and you know that. And so it's up to you to make sure you time things correctly. You
have to put yourself into danger.
Yeah. And just, yeah, they just fucking nailed it with that spot. And at least from reactions, it doesn't seem like this game ever hits that high. And maybe that's like unfair.
From what I've played, I've literally run into one enemy so far. But the game, and again, this could just be me putting myself kind of in that position to allow myself to be scared by the game. Right. But I will say that there were times where the game got an audible yell out of me from what it decided to do. Numerous times where I would just fucking book it and there was actually no enemy.
Nice. Nice. That's fine.
Did you watch? You watched Spooky with Scoops, right?
Yes,
you
played I did. It? That's correct.
The part where he's filling up the can of fuel.
Wait, is that before he does?
Oh yeah.
Right.
And then there's he spends like 30 seconds. Well, he's trying a minute.
Yeah, trying to put it in.
Put this thing in. Yeah, and there's like, oh, I need to.
Yeah, it's like right after that where he actually goes and fills it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
That part where there's the loud bang and stuff.
Yeah.
I was fucking gone. I was actually, I was all the way to the room where you're supposed to climb out back to the road. Nice. I was all the way up there on top of the crates before I realized, crap, I still need the fuel. And had to go back to go get the fuel.
Oh, man.
Nice. So yeah, it's definitely, and the part where he died, I didn't die, but it was about as perfect a moment as you could get. Because I noticed it at about the last second that I could have, did a quick 180, hit around the corner behind a crate just as it walked by. Because the problem is that up to that point, everything has been an illusion.
Yeah, exactly.
You've not actually had anything physically there.
Yeah.
And so you hear it and you expect it to just be an illusion again.
Yeah.
And then you just catch a glimpse of the shadow walk by and that's it.
Man,
so no, it's really really good game. Okay, I think it's cool. Just quite high as that. I think that while the first Amnesia, this game will not hit the highs I think that game did, but I feel like it has the potential, especially with the Chinese Room and their writing and their ability to create atmosphere. That I think it has a chance to at least be more consistent than the first game.
Okay, yeah, sure, I can give you that. Huh. All right. Cool. That's our Amnesia corner, our Final Fantasy 14 corner. One of which will be, hopefully both of which will be returning. I hope you play more of that.
Absolutely. My friend bought it for me. He will not let me not play it at this point.
Awesome.
Like, I will finish you that game.
Kick ass. I need you, and you're streaming at twitch.tv/Durin, brought to you by Netflix.
I did just save it. God damn it. Brought to you by Audible.
Audible.com. Wait, what ads are Twitch running nowadays? I don't remember. Anyway,
I have no idea.
Adblock is your friend. I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know. The whole divide between user interaction and people needing money on the internet is so hard for me because I love Adblock.
Just make a partnership with Subbable.
Subbable. Indeed. All right. Anything else, Durin? What else have you been up to?
Just D&D.
How's that going? Just give me a quick tip of how's the D&D going.
Give some highlights.
In our last encounter, we encountered a blue slime, I guess they're called.
Right.
And after watching the mage successfully do damage to it, the only one to successfully do damage to it with her fire, my barbarian got the brilliant idea that fire must be what this thing is weak to because physical hits weren't doing anything. So the natural thing, and pulled out a fire flask, lit himself on fire, and jumped into the middle of it.
Is this one of those games where one dude power gamed like shit, so he's OP, but he just has fun with it, or is this guy gonna die because he's on fire?
No, I fucking nearly died.
Nice.
Yeah, I fucking like. According to the DM, like, bones were starting to show before I finally got out of that thing.
Oh man.
And naturally, I got out from our, I can't remember what class he is, but he's a warrior leader type, swinging his warhammer at the slime. It went through the slime, and I grabbed it mid-slime and pulled myself out of the slime with the swing.
Because that's the trick with slimes, man. You use your blunt weapons. Slashing weapons just make it divide. Unless it's like weirdo 4.0 slimes that don't divide. Then it's slime.
It's not 4.0. We're playing 3.5, but this one...
Oh, yeah.
The green slime we had fought before that did divide. This blue slime did not divide.
Ooh, okay. Classy DM. Throwing you those curveballs.
Yeah.
Man, D&D is so awesome. All right. So as for me, what I've been doing, all right. So I've only been doing two things this week because I started my new job. The first of which was for the first time ever, and this is like late to the party to the extreme, which is a theme for both of my things this week. I finally played Cards Against Humanity in person.
Oh, wow.
With real life people around the table. It was great. Have you guys done that yet? I just played it online.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, you play with your family, right, Duren? And
I have, yes.
Yeah, and Durbles and you've been to PAX, etc. And I assume they play shit there, right?
Yeah, I tend to bring it to conventions, and it's a good thing to play at the hostel I stay at.
Nice. So we have the interesting, because they don't ship Cards Against Humanity to Australia. And that's a theme that will also continue to the next part of my thing. So what we had to do instead, well, one of my friends, what he did instead, it was he contacted their PR team or something like that. And he said he used the name of his company that he works for in Australia, which is one of Australia's largest construction companies. And he was like, yeah, we just want a copy of Cards Against Humanity and all the expansions. And she's like, oh, yeah, sure. And he sent it to us. So it was a 2-month shipping from Amazon.com, fulfilled by Amazon, I don't know. And essentially he ordered this in like the middle of the year and we completely forgotten it would show up. So we have a US copy of Cards Against Humanity. We know you can also print it out, and I believe you could also buy them at PAX Australia, but we didn't go to
either. That's just the standard edition, like the opening edition. You can't get any of the expansions.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
For free you can't get any expansions. And it's a smaller subset. Like we compared the two, and you get way more if you actually get the actual boxed cards. And you get a shitload. Like I wasn't expecting how huge the box was and how many cards you get in each. Like the expansions are the size I was expecting, and that's about right for an expansion, but the actual base set is gigantic. You get like 100 or something cards. It's massive.
Yeah, there's a reason why they came out with the big black box.
Yeah, actually it would be way more than 100 cards because a deck of cards is 50 something, right? So it'd be like 400 cards or something. It's huge.
I think it's like 300 something.
Yeah, it's massive.
Standard.
So yeah, we sat around and played, and we had the interesting experience because we're buying the American version of the game because there is an Australian version yet. And so we had like all these instances where there was like, we had to institute a new rule where if you didn't know what the fuck your card meant, you could trade it in for a new white card. Like that was the kind of thing we had to do.
Yeah, that's actually one of their suggested house rules.
Yeah, exactly.
But you could do so. As long as but you would be ridiculed by everybody else for you not knowing what it was.
Yeah, but in this case, it's just like what I don't know who this is.
Like, what American references did you guys not get? Just for example,
I don't know. It's hard because, like for example, one person around the table didn't know what it wasn't Wendy's. It was another burger joint. It might have been, what's that one? In-N-Out. It might have been one of those. Like it was like In-N-Out? One of those. So she had no idea what the fuck it was. And the actual joke itself wasn't that particularly fantastic. So we were like, all right, sure. So what we ended up doing, and like small things like that, there was a lot of people, like specifically people, like American celebrities that were mentioned on those cards that none of us knew. And we had to like Google some of them just to find out who the fuck they were. So I couldn't name them off the top of my head because obviously we didn't know them at the time. But what we did instead was essentially we grabbed those cards. So we'd scribble out In-N-Out and we just put in like McDonald's or no Hungry Jack's or something like equivalent but Australian. So all like the people cards, we ended up just like, so let's just say the deck ended up very political by the time we were ended customizing it, because essentially we just crossed them out and put in politician names, especially since the election just happened. We just had all of that in there.
Well, the deck is kind of by default pretty political anyway. I think a lot of those people you were crossing out probably were American politicians.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, that's for the American deck. I think, like, isn't it for the Canadian? It's like the, instead of the American president, it's the Canadian prime minister.
Ah.
Yeah. It is like their actual name.
Nice.
Yeah. I believe the decks are region specific.
But damn, that game's fun. Like, I wasn't like, it's been around for so long, and I played it online a couple times, and I didn't think it would hold up. Like, it's, but like, the key there is if, because we played, what's it? Let's see, we played it for about 5 hours, like a long time. It was, we played three rounds total. Yeah, I know, right? I honestly didn't expect that. We played three rounds total with the same group of four people. We didn't want to use a card czar because we thought it would just make things too arbitrary. And sometimes people, well, for example, I have much different, I tend to love the random and they don't. So it wasn't a case of,
here's the thing though, Seneca,
you're supposed to play to the person.
That's supposed to be the game.
Yeah. You're supposed to play to the person, but they just didn't want to. And I'm fine with that. So what we did instead was we had a voting system where we'd all vote on who won that round. And because there's four people, for tiebreakers, we did scissors, paper, rock, or rock, paper, scissors, however you want to say it. So it actually ended up pretty hilarious.
Rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock?
Sorry?
Sorry, never mind.
Did you say Spock? Was that a Star Trek reference?
No, it was actually a Big Bang Theory reference.
Okay.
Rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock.
Okay, awesome. No, I would just be confusing. No, we just scissors, paper, rock. It was fun. We ended up, I found out I was perhaps unsurprisingly the worst person at the table because I won two of the three rounds by a significant margin with things like, I think one was three blanks, and I ended up being, I went from shitting myself to running around a mall, hit punching people in the face because of Vietnam flashbacks. Like, that's kind of stuff I'd be playing. It was bad. I love how that game gives you an opportunity to find the worst within yourself and do it. And it was surprisingly fun.
You learn a lot about your friends playing that game.
Yeah. But I also think that with that group of people, we cannot play that game again because it would be boring. We need to bring new people to the fold.
That's the thing, though, is what we thought the same thing. You absolutely can, because there are so fucking many cards and so many possible combinations,
I guess.
Yeah.
Like, you absolutely can still play it.
I hope so.
Like, it definitely helps if there's new people being brought into the fold.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, obviously the jokes that you guys replaced on those cards are sort of catered to your guys' group.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The jokes that would win our little voting things would be, there'd be a through line to them because we're the same group of people. We have that specific kind of humor. And so more people adding in, change the kind of humor being used as well, and then interesting stuff. Anyway. Yeah, so that was fun. Cards Against Humanity totally holds up. You should buy it. And as to how to get in Australia, that doesn't take 2 months. The second thing I've been doing this week is I am now caressing my black American 3DS XL Durin, because it took me a long time to get this. It took me a long time.
What does this have to do with getting a copy of Cosmic
from overseas? All right, so I'll give my impressions of the actual 3DS later.
Are you making a secret like printing ring of Cards Against Humanity hitting inside the shells of 3DSs?
Dude, that would be like drug running, but with Cards Against Humanity cards, like one card at a time. You need to get 300 3DSs to complete a set. It's the ultimate money making scheme. So Australians can't, like, we have obviously Europe, we're under the PAL jurisdiction, so we have the European 3DS and European 3DS store. That means that we still do not have Shin Megami Tensei 4, for example. Like, the release dates on Australian stuff are so behind in a lot of cases, especially with the games I like, the weird obscure Japanese games or comparatively obscure Japanese games that I like, we're way behind. So I'd set out about a month ago to start saving towards importing a US 2DS. And there's actually some considerations there. So this element of the podcast is going to form some form of like public service announcement, because for anyone who lives outside America and hates the fact that they, for example, still don't have Shin Megami Tensei 4, this will help you out. So I started the epic quest of figuring out how I'm going to get 3DS from America. The first thing I was doing was figuring out what kind of 3DS I wanted. And the two big contenders were actually the 2DS and the 3DS XL. Because I don't know about you guys, but I find the original 3DS, it just looks chintzy and lame. And it's like the worst of all worlds because it doesn't have the nice big screens and it's just kind of small and glossy and shit. I hate glossy finished stuff. Like if you were to choose between something gloss finished or something matte finished, I'd go for matte every time. How about you?
Well, especially with something that you are constantly holding in your gross, sweaty hands.
Yeah. Ugh. And not to... I'll get to those impressions later. but yeah, so I ended up just going for the 3DS XL because that's the one everyone says to buy. That's the one everyone's like, okay, this is the one that's cool. It's got longer battery life. It's got bigger screens. It looks awesome. It fits better in your hands, etc. I was like, all right, I'll pick that one up. To the best of my knowledge, as a person who never, because I tried going into demo rooms to EB Games and stuff here, and what's happened is the Nintendo section in all the gaming stores in Australia has gotten smaller and smaller, and all the 3DS displays have been replaced by Wii U displays. And I think that's because...
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's because, like, 3DSs are selling no problems. People just buy 3DSs, like, as normal now, but no one's buying the Wii U. And I think unlike the UK, what happened was they threw out all their Wii U displays, essentially, and replace them with what sells, the 3DS displays. But I think Nintendo Australia, or the people who manage Australia, is trying to do it the other way around. Because they know the 3DS will sell, so they're pushing the Wii U as hard as they can, especially before these next-gen console hits. So I was not able to put my hands on a 3DS XL anywhere. I looked everywhere, everything was Wii U displays, which was crazy. So I did that kind of blind purchase it. Like, no one I know has a 3DS XL. And so I had to decide on that. And I went for the XL.
Oh, Shinboy of LinkedIncast and ScotchCast fame.
I mean, like, no one I know who I can hold it in my hands. Like, if I was going to the States, yeah. But...
Okay.
Yeah. Like, and that'll become relevant a bit. So, deciding the XL, it comes in black, and that was the major deciding factor. And I have a black DSi, and I fucking love that thing because it is really nice finish, really good in the hands, and that color is real good. I like black, obviously. So the method for me to purchase it, and this is the part that will actually be useful for people at home. So Amazon obviously does not ship 3DSs, etc., overseas. PlayAsia does. And are you guys familiar with PlayAsia in America? I assume you would be. No? Okay.
Sure.
So PlayAsia is a store which specializes in obscure Asian stuff. It's where you can buy Japanese hardware, or if you're in a different part of the world, they kind of like buy hardware and software from everywhere over the world, so that anyone from anywhere can buy any variant of the software. So if I wanted a Japanese copy of a game, even though it's still available here, I can go to PlayAsia and get that specific copy or that specific cover. So for people who want, for example, the Final Fantasy Crisis Core PSP with that decal on it, you can go to PlayAsia and get it usually. But the problem is with PlayAsia is it's really expensive. So for a 3DS XL black US copy, so to be able to use the US store and play US games, and because they're region locked, because Nintendo's are bastards, it's $350 essentially. $370 or so if I wanted expedited shipping. So it would be stupidly expensive. So what I did instead is there is a service called Ship It To. That's how they want you to say it, but it's spelled Ship ITO, so Shipito, .com. So ShipIt2.com gives you a US residential address that represents you. Amazon or whatever else you're using, works in any store, sends their goods to that address. Then they reship it to you. So it's essentially for Thurbleton, for example, if you ever wanted me to send me another Last of Us poster, you'd be using this.
Has that ever shown up, by the way?
No, it hasn't. I'm sorry. I really wanted that thing too. She's gone. It's just gone. So yeah. So this, they essentially, I get Amazon to send it to Shipper2, and what Shipper2 does is gives you three posting off like options in the US. For me, it defaulted to the Nevada one, and apparently Nevada has worse shipping than Canada. California. So it took longer for me. So I'd recommend for people, if they're using Shipper2, to use Californian warehouses. But essentially, yeah, it gave me a Nevada address. I entered that as an alternate address in Amazon. I got Amazon to ship the 3DS Black to Nevada, then Shipper2 in Nevada. What they do, and it's actually pretty cool, is as soon as they get the package, they actually take a picture of the package and the packing label and email you the picture, so you can have a look at it. What you can do is you can pay $5 more, and they'll open up the package, take out the box, whatever's inside, and take like 6 or 7 pictures of it from multiple angles to show you whether it's the right product, whether it's damaged or not, etc. And if you take that option, it also covers, it allows you to have full insurance on your shipping on the product as well. So I was able to remotely from Australia get these dudes in Nevada to take pictures of my 3DS XL box to make sure it's the black 3DS XL, the US version, etc., before they send it to me. So it ended up being a pretty cheap process. You have Amazon, and their shipping came to like $230 Australian for the 3DS XL, which is $206 US. Then these guys used TNT Express, which actually worked out really well. It got to me pretty cheap. So my total was about $300 Australian, because I went for expedited shipping all the way because I am an impatient bastard. Amazon sent it to them. They showed me pictures of it and made sure it was the right thing. Then they sent it to me via TNT Express. Got to me the week after they got it. It is awesome. I highly recommend Shipper2. They were pretty much professional across the whole board. Everything was really useful, and they did have pretty good like facts on how to get it done. Durin has problems getting into the call. Let me see if we can get him back.
All right. Having to pay like double the shipping or a little bit extra on shipping for American address, but they offered a reliable and what you assumed or what you perceived to be reliable service for getting it to
anywhere else,
places around the world.
Exactly. And they actually offer this not just Australia, like anywhere. Many countries around the world. I assume some countries aren't covered, but if you're...
Yeah, I'm sure any country that is of okay to be like have... people dropping off packages that aren't bombs.
Exactly. So like the fact that these guys did everything really well, like they pictured everything for me from good angles that actually let me look at the package, etc. It totally did everything I needed to, and he actually got it to me really quickly. So the slowest part of the process was actually getting it from Amazon through their seller, because Amazon doesn't sell Nintendo hardware themselves. They go through other people who stock the Nintendo hardware. So that dude giving it to Amazon, and then Amazon getting it to Nevada. It was in like Minden, Nevada. It was the default one, which is I used, which I'll never use again because it was slow, was the longest process. That took like a couple of days to get there. But from them to here, it was really cheap. So Shipit2, so shipito.com, is excellent. That's really cool. If you're living around the world, want American shit, buy it through them. The actual shipping itself cost me their shipping cost me $45, including the pictures, extra pictures I took, and expedited. There's obviously like longer delivery times available if you're fine with that. In the future, if I'm getting Cards Against Humanity expansion packs, I'll probably order through them. That's how that ties in for your question. Anyway, so now I have my 3DS. Durin, you back?
Yes, I'm back.
Okay.
Fuck Time Warner.
Yeah, dude. So, on unrelated news, my PS Vita, the screen started playing up. The screen on it, just like after a while, the touch screen on it just stopped working. So after like 2 hours of playing a game that used the touch screen, it just stopped responding. And what I'd had to do was turn off the screen and turn it back on. Then I looked up my purchasing details, and it turns out I was still under the first year of warranty. So I went to Sony. They actually fully paid for the postage. All I had to do was drop up the PS Vita itself and take out the accessories, just the PS Vita, to my post office, give it to the ladies there. They repackaged it, put it in bubble wrap, put it in, sent it to Sony. Sony sent it back. Within a week, I had a new PS Vita. Brand new. Wow. Well, it looks pretty brand new. Yeah. So the reason I say that is I recently have handled, due to that, a brand new PlayStation Vita, which is one of the nicest handhelds ever in terms of just physical design. By comparison, the all-plastic black 3DS that I received feels really cheap to the touch. And it's really weird because I don't have the same feeling with the black DSi. That has like an interesting like firm kind of almost felty, like very micro felty kind of finish to it. This is kind of like a smooth black plastic. And I say that because it still has a thing that if I'm touching it and shit, I can see my fingerprints all over it. So even though it's black plastic, it gets all fingerprinty. It's not reflective of any form. It's matte, but it's not a very like resistant matte finish. And the actual, like, it clicks. Like, I'm using it now, so you can hear it clicking. So it clicks on open. That's cool. And it clicks in multiple positions. That's awesome as well. But I'm not sure. Like, it's not like a very firm click, like a laptop. It feels like a pretty, like, it's not as bad as some of the older DS hardware, but it's not that great either. But the primary thing I'll say about the DS XL, aside from the relatively low, like, you can't really compete. Like, an all glass and metal thing like the PlayStation Vita will obviously feel better to your hands than a plastic 3DS. But the main thing about the DS XL that I can see is that the pixel density on the upper screen is actually noticeably bad. It's actually noticeably bad. Like, I didn't...
Well, it's because they had to do that because the resolution has to be the exact same as what the original DS was.
And that's kind of the weird thing, right? Because Apple dealt with that by pixel doubling. So when they went from, I think it was the iPhone 3 to the iPhone 4, or 3GS to the iPhone 4, they pixel doubled the screens so that the same apps could work on both. And how pixel doubling works is you're not actually getting more real estate. It's just filling the pixels interstitially such that you perceive as if it's higher pixel density, which it is. And you perceive it being smoother, even though the rendering is the same across both. It would have been awesome if Nintendo figured out a way, and maybe they'll do this in the future, of a 3DS XL, which was pixel doubled. Because, for example, I chucked in the Fire Emblem demo just to play it out to see if I liked the game. And turns out I do. When you have it in 3D mode, so note that you actually have a different pixelization level when you're in 3D mode to not. And that's for obvious reasons, because in 3D mode, it's using the lenticular technology. So it's kind of halving the already low pixel density per eye. So what you have is when you're looking at Fire Emblem, anything that's in 3D, the characters are actually really nicely designed. They have like their uniforms on them, and they have like nice little highlights to the uniforms and the little medals or whatever that would also be part of that. Anything that's really like well-designed or like intricately designed like that gets entirely obfuscated by the fact, by the lenticular 3D effect. So things are far away, they look like blocky or aliased by the pixel density itself. So I'm not even sure if it's the game's fault that the pixel is that it looks that bad. So when you actually turn off the 3D effect, that enables a different mode of the screen, and that actually increases the pixel density back to what it should be, and that looks way better. So the 3D effect, not only is it weird because whenever I move the screen, I have like weird doubling stuff. Like, you have to look at the screen very on. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but it also fucks up the look of anything 3D.
So what you're saying is you should have just bought a 2DS instead.
I'm saying, yeah. Like, I'm going to be using this 3DS. I'm going to be using this 3DS only in 2D mode. It's big. It feels chintzier than the PlayStation Vita. And it's not particularly pretty. It's not a very pretty looking device. It's big and like bubbly looking and circular and shit. Not circular, but like all rounded and stuff. And I think that's a pretty outdated design language. And like, if I would say that, unlike me, where I didn't really have an opportunity to try out one in real life, try one out in real life and compare it to an actual normal 3DS or a 2DS. Because I honestly believe that The 3DS XL, though a cool piece of hardware, is probably not the way you want to play 3DS games. If you're worried about aliasing, like some people, aliasing never bothers them, right? Like if you can go back and play PS1 games and not have any problems with it, then you're probably fine. Mm-hmm. But
so what you're saying is I'm going to buy a 3DS XL because yeah, that'd be... yeah, I can still go back and play Final Fantasy 7, 8, and 9 and not have a single bit of problem with the look of it. So
yeah, well, no, dude, check it out in real life, because there's more to it than just the aliasing. It's yeah. also the fact that the 3D effect accentuates it because of the lenticular screen design. So
yeah, well, I have a friend who has one, so I'll probably check his out before I do buy one.
Yeah, check his out. Check out the 2DS and do that. So that's my thing. That's my 3DS adventure. I sound really down on it, but that's mainly because I haven't fucking gotten the games yet. Because so the second part of it is I have a US 3DS. I can't use my credit card on the US store. So what I have to do instead is I have to buy points cards, digital points cards through services like PlayAsia. So I ordered my digital points cards from PlayAsia. And essentially what I'm assuming they're doing is they take your order. That means they unpackage a points card, scrub off the shit for you, and just email you. That's what I'm assuming they're doing, because it's they're in Hong Kong, or is it Shanghai? No, they're in somewhere in China, I believe. I ordered it like 9 p.m. Australian time, so it was past Friday night on their time. So they'd already finished work. So essentially, I have to wait till Monday for them to send me my digital purchase of a digital item, i.e. What they advertise is a digital sending of a points card. And then I have to enter those points into my 3DS XL, make sure they work, and then I'll be able to buy a game for my fucking 3DS XL. So all I've played so far is Fire Emblem's demo, which was good. I was actually surprised by how good it was. So that's why I'll be complaining. But I assume when I actually can start playing games in this thing, I'll be happy with it. But yeah, so that's my 3DS adventure. Cards Against Humanity, shipit2.com for the service I used. I've heard there's another good points card service for people outside America who need American points cards. NeoGAF guys recommended to me MaximusCards.com, which is a cool name. So I'll be checking those out probably when Phoenix Wright comes out to buy points through them to see how that works. And that's it. Like, because Phoenix Wright is probably going to release in the US well before it does overseas. Like, for people like us in the EU regions. So that's why I bought it in the first place, essentially. It's cool because they give you like this weird little survey when you buy a 3DS and you register it to nintendobullshit.com, whatever the fuck they use. It's the weird Nintendo Club. They give you a survey and it's like, why did you buy a 3DS? And I'm like, other. Because I have all these options like, oh, because people told me to. And I was like, other. I was like, the games. And so what game made you purchase 3DS? And most of the ones you'd expect, like all the Zeldas and Marios and shit, and even Fire Emblem was on there, but I was like, Phoenix Wright, Dual Destinies. I was like, So I'm very happy with it. Hopefully, for people out there, I'd say at least try it out first. Don't just spring for the XL because it's the good one. Make sure the screen works for you. Because for me, especially compared to the Vita, and this is the problem I'm having, I have the Vita on one hand, and the 3DS in the other, and they are really different approaches to the handheld market. One is all about like quality of the experience and screen and all that stuff. The other one's just about fucking having obscure Japanese games. And I love both, but yeah, we'll see. And that's what we've been doing this week. The only thing from TGS has been really big disappointment, man. Like, there's just nothing.
I guess I have one more thing. I'd like to at least mention.
Go ahead.
Because I'm a little torn on it. I'm not sure if either of you have messed with it yet either. Have either of you, or do either of you have a device that you have downloaded and checked out iOS 7 on?
Yes, my iPad.
What do you think of it?
I think the icons are disgustingly ugly. I think it's more of like a change thing. Like Thurbleton. We're going to be talking about TGS and maybe some console stuff before we leave. Do you need to check out? Because we woke you up to do this podcast.
Yeah, I'm going to go to bed again.
All right. So it's just going to be me and Durin for the rest of the show. Hopefully Durin doesn't disconnect due to freaking internet issues again. But for today, goodbye, Thurbleton. Thanks for all the fish, I guess.
Yeah. Superhotgame.com. Check it out, folks.
Cool. Take care. I'll add that to the show notes. Awesome. Yeah. So you see that in the show notes. See you later. All right. We're back. Okay. So Thurman's off. We said goodbye to him. Duren and me are going to be finishing out this podcast. We're going to push through, but Duren's been having some internet problems today. So goddamn it. This could be interesting. Oh god. Well, you know what? We're going to give it a good shot for you listeners out there. See if we can get this podcast at least remotely filled in. So we're talking about iOS 7. I think it's important which device you've installed it on, because I think it'll be actually kind of different depending, because what do you have, like a iPhone?
I have a the 4S.
Okay, right, sure. Because I have a iPad 2. And it's like the oldest supported device. It's been for.
So how does that run? Because I've heard some bad stories of people loading on the older stuff.
Like, so it's the actual interface is buttery smooth. It's actually been pretty nice. Haven't had a problem with that. But I haven't tried to play a game on it yet. I've only really used the browser since yesterday, because that's what I do with my iPad anyway. So it's actually been pretty good. But I've heard things about Apple, like Apple OS's on older hardware, and I'm kind of worried about that. But like beyond that, there's other things like which should affect this. Like, for example, like you have an iPhone. I used to have an iPhone. I used to swipe left at the start screen like all the time to search for a song and then play it.
Yeah.
So that's totally changed, right?
Yeah. I literally took me until I installed it basically last night right before bed. Mm-hmm. And it took me until this afternoon after work before I realized that you swipe down now.
Yeah. And is it the old search menu? Because my iPad, when I swipe down, it brings up my notifications. So how the fuck does that work for you?
When you swipe down on this, it gives you basically a search bar and still shows you like your home for apps.
Right. Maybe that's just a phone thing. Maybe the iPad doesn't have... Does the iPad have a search bar?
I would imagine, right?
Either way, I didn't use it on the iPad because I don't have any music on my iPad, so whatever. But yeah. So how do you feel? What are your thoughts on iOS 7 so far?
Initially, I was not super keen on it, though I've kind of learned... Well, see, that's the thing. Like, I've kind of learned that I think a lot of that more so had to do with the child's toy like look of the app icons now.
Dude, so I brought out my iPad, so you'll hear me probably playing with Adner. They look fucking, because I have like, because not all the third parties have updated the apps, so Google Maps still looks like the old one, and it looks like it's a pretty little like little icon with the G on and all that stuff. Compare that to like the new Safari icon, which is just this like flat, shitty looking compass like figure. I kind of like, I know, because like part of the movement for iOS 7 was to remove the skeuomorphism, which is like the how they used to use like paper-esque backgrounds and shit for stuff, and like metal chrome finishes, and that they wanted to remove all that, but in part of that process they've just kind of just flattened all the buttons, like all the apps.
It's really weird because like they've flattened all the buttons, but I don't know if you've noticed, but when you move it around, it moves your background ever so slightly. So they added depth while at the same time flattening.
It's like a weird, like dumb feature, and it doesn't work for a visual video output. Because like Norm and Will, the tested.com, did a video on iOS 7, and they couldn't get it to work because apparently it doesn't work via the if you're outputting, but it just it's like this minuscule So unless you have it, you can't really see what it looks like. But it's just this minuscule like movement when you move the phone, in my case, the tablet. It adds nothing to the experience.
The weird part about it is it does it even for pictures that you've taken, which I imagine means that what it does is now all of your pictures are slightly zoomed in.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I can see.
In order for there to be something on the outside. I will say, like, there's some simple things I like. I do like the... the slide, the unlock screen. I like that. Looks pretty. There's Yeah, they've gotten rid of basically all the UI, and there's just the letters and numbers and whatever picture you have on there.
Yeah.
I like the fade in and out now. There's not like a harsh turn off screen and turn on screen. It's all fading.
Oh, okay.
I think that looks a lot better.
I haven't seen that yet.
Cool.
Oh, no, you're right.
And again, there are some small things that, like the weather app is really, it's dumb, but it's cool because when it was raining last night and thunderstorming, that was reflected on my weather app. Like I opened it up and there's like lightning strikes and rain and shit.
Okay.
Like,
that's cute.
That was kind of cool.
That's cute.
The changes to Safari initially, I was kind of not sure about, but after messing with it a bit more, I kind of like them.
So with the changes to Safari, oh my God, this segment of the podcast is going to be so boring to people who don't have an iOS device.
Yeah, okay. We'll keep it short then.
We'll go for a long if we want, but I'm going to put it in the show notes when we stop talking about iOS. So pay attention to that. But I'm going to discuss this all the way through. So the weird thing about the Safari app is they used to have like the loading of a web page in like the URL bar, right? Like the URL bar used to, unless I'm horribly mistaken, it was the URL bar that went blue from left to right as it loaded. But now they moved that, at least on the iPad, to a little strip below the tab that's invisible. So when you hit refresh, it's just this tiny little strip that moves from left to right next to the tab. And that, I don't like that because I don't think it's obvious enough. For example, if I'm loading NeoGAF specifically, it's blue at the top already. And it's a blue strip that indicates loading. So I can't even tell. Like when I hit refresh on NeoGAF, which is what one does on NeoGAF, it's hard to see and it's annoying. I would prefer the old method. But the actual,
I don't know. I guess maybe it's different between the two devices. I feel like with the phone, it's not hard to see.
Hmm.
I like just in general the simplified UI they've gone with kind of across the board. But it definitely comes off a lot in Safari.
Hmm.
Like one of the things I initially felt was weird was in the old version, when you would scroll down on a web page, you would lose your address bar.
Right.
It was only there if you scrolled all the way to the top.
Yes, that's correct.
They've now changed that. That's always there at the top now.
Yeah.
But now when you scroll down, you lose your navigation buttons.
Whoa. Okay, this is Safari as well.
This is Safari. Now, I did find out, however, if you quickly scroll up, mm-hmm. even if you don't scroll all the way up, if you just do a quick swipe down motion,
right.
you do regain all of your navigation buttons again.
Okay. Because I think on the iPad, I'm testing it now, the navigation bar just stays the whole time.
Okay. So, it's probably just a matter of screen real estate.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the small screen of the iPhone as much space as they can.
That's good. I like that. Because I always thought that, especially on a small phone or a comparatively small phone, you don't want all that speed stays on the actual navigation thing, so that's cool.
I also do really like that they've changed your tabs now. I don't know how it is on iPad,
mm-hmm.
But on the phone, when you would go to look at your different tabs in Safari, it would basically be kind of a preview pane, and you'd swipe left and right to see the different panes.
Right.
Whereas now with this one, they've gone with more of like a Rolodex feature, so you can kind of see like four of them all at once.
Let me see if I can. I'm going to add a bunch of tabs and see how it works for this. Okay, no, this. We just have, like, an iPad is just, you just get tabs, like a browser, like Firefox browser used to
look
like. And there's no, that I can see. Oh, wow, that does that. Okay, I didn't know that did that. there's no way I can see to get a preview of all your tabs at the same time, at least while I'm looking at it. But what it does do, weirdly enough, and iOS has started doing, iOS 7 starts doing this, and I don't particularly like it, is if you drag from off screen from right to left whilst in the browser, it's forward, and if you do the same in the reverse, it's back. So it actually gives you a preview as you're dragging your finger across the screen of what previously what was the back, what would back take you to. So it's kind of,
oh wow, yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
It's kind of cool, and it's weird because it's confusing at first because I thought it was changing tabs. Like, that's what it looks like, but it's not. It's showing you what's back and forward, and that's not very clear, but it does it.
The weird part is, at least on the phone, here, let me try going into something, because I feel like maybe on the phone,
mm-hmm.
that might not be the case. Like, it may only go back. I don't know that it's going forward as well.
Yeah, you have to make sure you have something forward, and then you can, But yeah,
in something back. But
while he does
okay,
that,
yeah, it does awesome. Yeah,
exactly, it's That's and it's kind of really cool. Really cool little feature. It's confusing. I still think that should
probably I feel like a lot of that is iOS 7. Like there's no, you know, when they release these things, there's no manual showing you all the new features they've added to it, all the little tiny things. So it's all just kind of experimenting, finding out what you now are capable of doing. Like now I can take panorama photos for whatever reason.
But on like the same tip, like, they've added these swipe from off screen everywhere on the phone, because the coolest thing about iOS 7 is swiping from bottom up, so past your screen to on your screen and upwards. You have your new control panel, which allows you to straight up enable, disable airplane mode, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, things, sleep timer and your sound, and also screen brightness and volume, all in the one spot. And it's awesome to have, and there's a camera button there as well. So it's like straight up from anywhere on the phone, even with an app open, swipe from bottom up and it brings up the control panel. And that is my favorite feature of iOS 7. It is pretty cool because an Android Nexus devices, I don't know how it is for skin stuff. If you swipe from top down, it brings you to your notification center. And there's a button on the top right of there that brings you to these controls. So it's the equivalent of two button presses. Here, I like the fact that it's one.
Was there always a flashlight?
No.
Wasn't, right? Because there were apps for that.
Yeah, there were apps for that. So they've killed the flashlight market with their...
Yeah. Damn them.
But I think it uses... Did they talk about this in the Bobcast? I don't remember. But it uses the flash on the back, not the screen. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what... the app that I used did the same thing, because the screen just isn't bright enough.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to use the flash.
And they stole... I'm going to call this that, but it may not be. The... app management from Android. So when you double click now, it brings you to a horizontal scrolling preview of all your apps, and you swipe up to close them.
That's always sort of been there.
Yeah, well, it used to be like a little bar at the bottom. Which, yeah,
I do like the preview of it now.
Exactly. Yeah. So it used to be a replacement for your drawer or whatever you call it, your thing at the bottom of the screen. And I used to, just shift that up or maybe replace that, I forgot. And it showed you just the icons of all the apps you had. But now it actually gives you a full, preview of them. But the cool thing now, which is what Android has done for ages, is you can just swipe to close. Before you had to bring up your drawer, bring up your apps list, hold down, and then click the little, X next to it. Now you can just swipe them all away, which is finally good for multitasking.
And I will say, like, I was worried after hearing that the iPhone 4 had some pretty serious slowdown problems with iOS 7. I was really worried that the 4S would also suffer from the same problems.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the extra power that they put in the S seems like it's enough that this phone's able to pretty easily handle just about anything. I will say, I did notice when I first put it on there, I did have a lot of apps open at the time.
Yeah.
And there was some definite slowdown, which is the first time I've seen that on this phone.
Interesting. Yeah.
But as long as you are diligent about closing your apps like you should be, because it does suck down battery power to have those things running.
Yeah.
Then you shouldn't really run into any problems.
Right. And then
on the
finally,
4S, I can't speak for the 4.
Like the killer app of iOS 7. I say notification, sorry, the control panel is, but this is the second best in my opinion, or it might be the best, is finally, after all this motherfucking time, they've put in automatically updating for apps. Oh my god.
Did they really?
Yeah. So you actually have to enable it. So go into your apps, your Apple app thing, whatever, app store, and go to updates, and it'll prompt you whether you want to enable automatic updating. So finally, they're doing what Android's doing, and I assume they're pushing the new app updates down to you, as opposed to having a little indicator saying 150 unupdated apps next to my fucking app.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's iOS 7 in a nutshell. I hate the icons. I like the rest for iOS 7.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. Like, initially, I was not too keen on it. I realized it was basically just the icons that I wasn't really a big fan of.
Yeah.
The more I'm messing with the OS, the more I'm actually I'm pretty happy with it.
I mean,
there are definitely changes it can make, but there's always iOS 8.
Yeah.
God damn it.
And as for where I stand in the overall market today, I still vastly prefer Android because I just love the amount of customizability you have there. And I like stock Android's style. But iOS is now, like, the notification center is much better now. It's still not as good as Android, but it's still better. I love the whole, like, calendar in your notification center. So you bring it down, you can see your calendar, you can see your alarm clocks, etc. I love that. If I had to choose a tablet or a phone, I'd still pick iOS because of the app environment. By no longer, say, there's no longer as many reasons to switch to Android. And that's the best thing I could say about it. Which is crazy. Like, so if you're a person who games, get an iOS device, in my opinion. But if you're like me and you just use your phone for browsing the internet and phone stuff, then Android's the way to go. Anyway, so TGS, Durin, that kind of came and went, didn't it?
Yeah, sort of happened. is that already over? Like,
Man, I don't know. I think so. Like, it's the Saturday. I think it went from the Tuesday to the Friday. I think
it's just it's a crazy to live in a world where Gamescom has more news come out of it than TGS.
Significantly more news coming out of it than TGS.
Yeah.
Oh my god! Like, the TGS announcements that were big weren't even like Japanese announcements. It was like the rest of the world's release dates for the PS4, and they're getting it before Japan.
And they would release it. Yeah, and the big announcement for Japan is, you guys get to wait until next year,
and woo! Everybody else gets it. Oh my god! But like, there's reasoning to that. Like, some sites haven't realized that there's actually a reason for that, which is like, So China aside, the countries that they're released, the Asian countries that are getting the PS4 before Japan have high literacy rates for English. And what you're seeing is almost all the games they announced that are releasing in those countries before Japan are English, but with that country's subtitles. So they're not actually getting fully localized versions of the games, which is great. Like, the Japanese wouldn't stand for that. And that's kind of the reason why I think... Yeah. That the Japanese are getting it last, because they're getting fully localized versions, where there's these other countries aren't.
There's that, and you know, like, specifically with the PS4,
yeah,
there's no competition there. Sony can release whatever
they want to. Yeah, dude, like, yeah, Sony is, that's the stumping grounds, man. They're done. Like, maybe the Wii U will be competition, but I doubt it.
It stands more of a chance than the 360 or the One. Sorry.
Yeah, dude, totally.
One.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Wii U numbers now are the max the One ever sells in Japan. But hey, what do I know? Maybe there's enough people out there who like them Titanfalls to play the Xbox One.
Maybe this will be the generation for Xbox in Japan.
Yeah, the Tier 3. Oh my god! Like, Sony's doing in February, and I don't think the Xbox is going to release by then in Japan at all. I think it's going to be the end of 2000. Because all we know is it's a Tier 3. That's all we know for Xbox. So yeah, they'll be undisputed there. So it doesn't really matter to them. Mm-hmm. But the main thing I got from TGS, aside from impressions for games like Deep Down, etc. Oh, by the way, Deep Down apparently looks as good in real life as it did in that trailer.
Well, yeah, that's
impressive.
Pretty impressive. The only thing I'm worried about is, like, I'm watching this thing and I'm like, you know, you guys kind of sort of tricked me a little bit with Dragon's Dogma. You made me think that you could make a real RPG. You made an endearing RPG, but not really, like,
a good one.
I feel like with that one, they're like, we can make a Skyrim too, and this is what we got with Dragon's Dogma. Mm-hmm. I feel like with Deep Down, this is them saying, and granted, you know, From Software is, I believe, also Japanese, so it's not necessarily them trying to copy a Western thing here, but it does sound like because that's Capcom, right? This does sound like them saying, like, well, we can make a Dark Souls 2.
Yeah, that's definitely the touchstone. It's like Dark Souls mixed with Assassin's Creed. And I only say Assassin's Creed is because of the futuristic undertones to it. Like,
yeah.
The rest of it, I know it doesn't play like Dark Souls. And if you listen to the 8-4 podcast, you can hear extended impressions.
Well, I mean, I watched a little bit of gameplay, and like, it's definitely more action-y than Dark Souls.
And you can take more hits. Like, you're straight up just not as fucking featherweight as in Dark Souls. But, like, they went for that look in purpose, and it's kind of misleading.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I will say, you know, if nothing else, it'll be better than Rise.
Wow. But Rise is going to be launched. I don't think this is going to be till like late 2014. If then, like, it might be later 2014. So
yeah.
Yeah. But that was apparently the winner of the show for TGS. The main thing from TGS, aside from obviously the boss of Nintendo, well, the ex-boss of Nintendo passed away recently, and I'm not a person to speak on that. Duren, do you have any words about Hiroshi Yamauchi?
Not really. By the time I really got into like the nitty gritty of the media, Iwata had already kind of stepped up as the leader. But I will say that like I didn't realize when exactly that happened, and seeing that happened right around 2002, where he stepped down and Iwata stepped up to the plate, and seeing the direction Nintendo has gone, I can definitely see maybe why a lot of people feel like maybe Iwata is not the man for the job, because it does feel like Nintendo's heyday ended when Iwata stepped in.
It's kind of crazy because, again, like the 84 podcast is where to go if you want like extended impressions of both TGS and this apparently great man's passing. But like the hearing through them that he was the one, he doesn't play many games, but he has a good like feel for what people like. And he's the one who like greenlit a lot of the major classics back in the day, especially when he was still in control. So him being that guiding figure behind Nintendo was an interesting circumstance where he had a good eye for games, but a lot of people also criticized him for holding the company back on things like online infrastructure, etc. Like the fingers were pointed his way in that he dictated to some extent, even though he left the company to a large degree, who their top management would be, because they'd be vetted by him specifically. And their top management are the ones who are holding Nintendo back in a lot of ways. So it's been interesting to see the reaction to this, because obviously in terms of what he did specifically, what he touched with his own hands or like approved himself, he has a great legacy of like games he's done. But in terms of Nintendo going forward, that company is just like in a weird spot in general. Like it's
They are.
Yeah. But aside from him, the biggest takeaway, I'd hate to move on from that topic, but I'm just not a Nintendo person. So, the biggest takeaway from TGS for me is finally we have, both Vita and Vita TV remote play impressions from various places. So have you had an opportunity to see any of this, Duren?
I haven't. I kind of like, I was really interested in the Vita TV thing. Until I heard that they had no real plans of bringing it to North America, and then I just kind of didn't care anymore. But those plans have – it sounds like those plans maybe have changed There was a news article I saw, I think, on IGN today where Sony had actually come out and said like the North American interest in Vita TV was way, way higher than
anticipated.
And we're like, well, you fucking think? Like it's like a $100 Vita. Like, of course it was, because we want a $100 Vita.
Exactly.
Like, that's what it comes down to. It's a way cheaper option.
Yep.
Plus, you know, Vita games look good enough that you can play that on a television and it doesn't look super weird.
And you know what? Like, even though it's 720p.
Not only that, but like here in America, like it's such a weird thing for them to only have, it seems like, in the Japanese.
Oh, we dropped there, but we're back. Duren, you were saying about.
So, yeah, basically. What I was getting at is it's weird that it's something that's released to a Japanese audience where, you know, they do mobile gaming. They play games on the train, on the commuting and what have you. Whereas a lot of us here in America, we play our handhelds like at our desk or, you know, on the living room couch or what have you.
It comes to like the basic structure of Americans generally use cars for transport. It's a higher percentage here than public
transport. The idea of having a device that lets us hook that up to the television makes a lot more sense, I feel like, here than it ever would in Japan.
And how much of this would be, though, of them like, because this thing didn't just come out of nowhere. They were it looks really nice. Physically and what's his face, industrial design wise, designed the shit out of it. It looks awesome. It's like a nice little box. I think this has been in development for a while. I bet I think there was always in the cards to bring it to the States, but I bet they thought, because just in terms of adoption rates, Japanese Vita purchases have been better than they have been in the States. They thought, hey, Japan is a Vita market. Let's bring it to Japan. But what they didn't realize is that in that time, Google has done streaming boxes, Roku has blown up, Apple's done the Apple TV. Like, the market is primed for something exactly like the Ouya happened, for fuck's sake. The market is primed for something like this in the States, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, to me, as somebody who does live over here, it makes a lot more sense here than most other places, definitely Japan.
Exactly.
So I think it's just them kind of missing the mark on where, like, while yes, the Vita market is larger in Japan, the difference is they can sell Vitas in Japan.
Yeah.
They haven't proven that they can sell Vitas in America.
Exactly.
But a lot of that comes down to price. And if you, because from the sounds of it, like, this Vita TV doesn't require a Vita.
No. It has options for, like, using the sticks to appropriate for the loss of touch screen. So it has pretty large compatibility across the board for all Vita games. And it is a Vita in that box. It does everything a Vita does, except for having those touch screens. So you can, you do not need a Vita. This just works for $100
on your Pixel TV. Specifically, it works with, like, you know, a DualShock 3.
Yeah. And a DualShock 4 after a patch.
Yeah. So if you own a PlayStation 3 or PlayStation 4, like, you can use this thing to play Vita games. So if the touchscreen or the mobility of a Vita isn't what sells you on a Vita, this is a perfect alternative to that. This is their 2DS.
Yeah, this is their 2D. And you know what? It's very telling that Nintendo announced the 2DS and Sony announced this. It's very telling what the different strategies for the handheld, or just in general, like, the added gaming market, like the side market of gaming, of this smaller game space. It's really cool seeing those two companies tackle it from entirely different perspectives, because this is an adult device. This is essentially, obviously, some people will buy it for their kids, for the rumpus room or whatever, for smaller games, handheld games for them on the TV. But the fact that this does remote play for your PS4 is, like, why half the people are buying it. Like, it's,
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It is. That brilliant idea.
If they release that here in America, and, you know, I get a PS4, I absolutely would get one of those just so that I could have a PS4, like, in my fucking bedroom too.
Yeah, dude. Like,
at that point, you can literally just have your PS4 any room that you have one of these in, or move this thing around to any room in your house.
On that note, and I'm happy we finally got to talk about the, because you know what? Without you, Duren, for the last couple of weeks, I've been bringing up the Vita TV. And then just being, like, shunned to the side because no one wants to talk about it. But that is...
That's because we're the only two people that we know that own Vitas.
It's such a good device. Like, especially, like, yeah, just the build quality on it. It's fucking... Yeah. It's the weirdest device in the world because for one of the few times in gaming, everyone loves it, but no one's buying it. Like,
it
just...
Well, it's funny because it's managed to replace... the PSP as the most wasted potential of a piece of hardware.
But unlike the PSP, Sony's not giving up on it. Like, this is pushing.
And not only that, but in this case, like, the wasted potential isn't because of rampant piracy. It's just because I think it's mostly because Sony approached it in the wrong way with their marketing.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, this is, you know, you can now get your console experience on the go, and not realizing, completely missing the mark on what handheld gaming really is. And that, like, we don't want, if I want console gaming, I'm going to play it on my console. What I want in a handheld is a specific kind of game and a specific kind of experience. And launch Vita did not offer that. And I feel like it really embracing the indie stuff and the weird on the Vita has really helped a lot with getting saturation out.
And then you have cross-buy and PlayStation Plus. Like, the way to get games on your Vita has changed so much since the launch of the Vita. That's,
absolutely.
The story of that thing has changed. But on that note that I was talking about previously, because I failed to do a segue then, so remote play impressions have finally hit for both the PlayStation Vita and PlayStation Vita TV. The Vita TV, overall impressions of that have been pretty positive. Just in terms of the hardware itself, I think the general reaction is kind of weird seeing the Vita interface on TV, because, like, for most people who may not know this, I'm not sure if a lot of people do or not. It's on the Vita, it's a primarily touch-based interface. But if you go into the options, you can enable you controlling the interface with the buttons, the face buttons. You actually have to, it's disabled by default.
Did not know that.
There you go. Hey, pro tips from the Scotchcast crew. So you can enable that. And that's the interface it's using for the Vita TV. So it's literally just using the Vita OS, but with that feature enabled. So if you use the D-pad, you go through the screens as normal, as if you were just scrolling through them like a menu. And to so how the flipboard, because Vita is all about like these kind of panes that it's multitasking is by panes that move across, and you kind of like flipping them, like turning pages and stuff. Like that's how the interface works. So like the Vita, if you've enabled physical controls, I think you use the shoulder buttons to switch between home screens and different panes, and you hold the circle button to close a pane. So it's kind of weird. Like it doesn't work as well as it could. But it works because it's been working since the Vita launch by a option in the Vita settings. So it's kind of cool. But aside from that, the main impressions, obviously, that everyone wants to know are the PS4 remote play sessions. And Durin, I was so worried about this feature because it was a huge selling point for me in terms of the Vita in general. Even though I already owned it, I was like, I cannot wait to use my Vita this way. And we're talking about like only 3 or 4 frames lag, dude.
Wow.
It is, on a 60 frames per second game, only 3 to 4 frames lag for remote play. On the same, so how remote play works between the two is a Vita or Vita TV can remote play straight from the PS4. The PS4 actually has a dedicated chip for it, which goes between the graphics card output and the output to your TV. So it's as low a latency as they can physically make it. It's on the same fucking board. It is very high, and it's a dedicated chip that's developed by Gaikai. So the guys who did high-end game streaming over the internet made this chip, and they're owned by Sony now, so they put that in the PS4. So the chip encodes the PS4 output to 720p or 1080i for the Vita TV, but I believe it just does it at native for the PlayStation Vita, but we can't really confirm or deny. So you're getting a 544p image to the PlayStation Vita, so it'll work over most networks pretty easily. And so it's doing that. It's the PS4 is rendering out, passing through this chip, and then sending it over Wi-Fi to your Vita. And you can send it over your local Wi-Fi, so your router, etc. But the Vita actually also has an option to connect directly to your PS4 via a hotspot, like ad hoc method. So the PS4 creates a ad hoc hotspot for it. The Vita connects directly to PS4, so your router is not even involved. So you don't even need a router for this to work. And yeah. 5 or so, I think the numbers as people have somewhat derived them, about 60 ms, or 67 ms lag for the control. So the responses we're hearing from people played it, like IGN, etc., are lag free. Like it feels like you're playing a PS4 game on the Vita, and that is
no. The only part I would be worried about is if you're talking, you know, 60 ms lag.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, there and back again, like, ping.
Yeah. But I'm saying, like, how does that translate then? Like, do you think you could realistically play, like, say, like an online shooter?
I think you can play a shooter. I think you can play a racing game. I do not think you can play a fighter.
Okay. So, I was wondering, because you're talking, like, you know, 60 ms latency. Like, mm-hmm. that's ideal for a shooter already. And then when you would then take into consideration network lag, you're talking at least doubling that, if not more. Like that's
for sure.
You're talking, you're probably talking closer to 200 ms by the time.
To put it in perspective, so let's bring it back down to frames because it's easy to use. So the Vita via remote play looks to have about 4 to 6 frames of lag. We're obviously not sure because we're working off video here. Video off of video. So, but yeah, 4 to 6 frames of lag behind, your PlayStation 4. But that translates. So TVs have only in the past 3 years for LCD TVs specifically been able to achieve that. So we're talking about early to mid 2000s TVs. So the things people played Guitar Hero on, that's the same amount of lag that you're getting from the Vita TV. So the Vita. So it's actually as good as a Guitar Hero capable TV from the mid 2000s in a lot of cases.
Okay.
So it is solid. And that's why I'm so excited, because that is so technically impressive to me as a person who's like very like even remotely understands what they're doing with it. The fact that you're controlling the game, giving inputs to the PS4 and receiving inputs from the PS4, so outputs from the PS4, all within that time frame, a couple of frames. So the fact that people are reporting lag-free, that's amazing. So yeah, dude. Aside from that, as for visual impressions on the Vita itself, because it's a small screen, people are reporting it looks absolutely pristine, no artifacting, nothing like no hitching. They can't detect any of that on the Vita. And that's
That kind of makes sense, because it is still the PS4 that is powering all of this.
Yeah, and it's a dedicated chip that's sending it, so it shouldn't have like weird hitching problems. So that is really cool. On the Vita TV, because that's blowing up to 720p video, people are saying that you can see some compression artifacts. And honestly, to me, that's obvious almost. Like, it's just like, yeah. There will be compression artifacts because it's sending across. Like, Duren, do you think it will be a big problem for you if for your bedroom TV you'll have a couple of compression artifacts on your PS4 game?
No, not at all. I mean, I kind of figured it this way. Like, those games are already going to look so much better than what we're used to.
Yeah.
That I played games on live.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay, cool.
Yeah. So, like, I've seen what it could generally look like, and, like, honestly, like, the compression you get from that, as long as you have a good connection, is not terrible. It's you know, it more so, what you notice more than the compression is actually the odd loss of color saturation.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree. You know what? Because I was going to say, for people who are doubting whether they can play a game in 720p or not, think of it this way. Videos you download from giantbomb.com, so HD video. So if you're a premium subscriber, you can download HD. Or if you're watching HD Giant Bomb videos on YouTube, those are 720p encoded. And the only thing I have problems with those are the color depth. Because otherwise, that's totally playable. Like, playing games looking like that, that's fucking totally playable. It's just, you're totally right. You lose a bit of color. And it's weird to me that that's a problem with this, but it probably is. But yeah, speaking of color, so I'm excited about that. Duren, do you think you'll be using Remote Play? I'm going to be using the shit out of it.
I will be. However, I'm starting to kind of go the other direction on a new console in the first year.
Ooh, interesting. All right.
I mean, partly because of available funds for it anyway.
Yeah.
But also, like, everything's coming to the PC.
That's true.
Most everything. Like, yes, I will want to play Infamous at some point. Absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, Titanfall coming to the PC.
Yep.
You know, anything that's a big release is obviously going to be a PC release. So I feel like that $400 that I would spend on the console would almost just be better spent upgrading my computer right now.
I'd argue. I would say the $400 to be spent on a console is better spent on 8 games or 10 games, right? Like, that's where I can see that price argument being made, especially with like GTA 5 and a bunch of games coming out at the end of the year, Watch Dogs, etc.
Well, what I mean specifically is because my computer, you know, as we've said in the past, I got, you know, I have processor at this point.
Right.
Yeah. To get my computer up to speed, like, I would much rather spend that money to get my computer up to speed with those consoles than to just buy one of those consoles.
Yeah. For example, in your case, if you bought a like 760, GDX 760 and a bunch of games, that will probably better serve you over the next like half year to year than a new console.
Yeah. And especially like, I think one of the biggest things that really kind of turned me around on that and made me decide like, I really don't need a console right now was Valve's announcement, which we haven't talked about here, of their family sharing plan now. Like, I can share my games with my wife. We can play each other's game libraries on each other's computers without having to log in with each other.
So we touched on that last game library
with my friend.
So we touched on that last week, but none of us would necessarily use it. Like, so for you in a household that would actually use family sharing, do you? Because there is that problem of you can't really use them at the same time across two accounts. Like, you do have to. Yeah. How do you feel about family sharing?
I mean, from the sounds of things, I think that, like, I believe the way I understood it, like, my wife could play one of my games from my library the same time as I'm playing one of my games from my library.
No.
We just can't play the same game, right?
No, that's the Xbox system. So how Steam has done it is you're sharing your whole library or nothing.
Well, no. I understand you're sharing your whole library, but yeah. The way I read it, it sounded like you're sharing your whole library, but as long as they're not playing the same game that you're wanting to play.
No, I'm rapidly shaking my head. Obviously, people can't hear, see that. Okay. And Darren can't either. But sadly, it is if she's playing anything from your library, you're locked out. Or she's locked out of your library if you're playing anything from your library. It's the whole library or nothing. But obviously, that's subject to change. It's like a software patch would change that. And hopefully, it'll change to a game-by-game basis. Like was planned for the Xbox One. But it's still like
it helps a lot because, like, you know, with a feature like that, we wouldn't have had to buy, you know, like two copies of Skyrim because we weren't playing at the same time. You know, I do play other things. I do other things. Mm. There are definitely times where she could be playing and I'm not, or, you know, I could be playing a non-Steam game and she could be playing that. Like there's definitely a use case for it and I don't have to pay anything extra for it.
Mm.
I can just get it.
And that's kind of the crazy thing. Like, in your situation, that's a huge value add. But for me, like, I obviously don't really share my shit. For me, like, stuff like cross-buy and, like, remote play are the value adds. Because I want to play the same game on the move because I still use public transport sometimes or around my house and on my TV. And that's kind of, like, the weird split there. So Steam has family sharing. And obviously, eventually, the games will look better on PC. But the PS4 has that ecosystem. And so, like, both are hugely valid. So your stance on, like, not necessarily, like, just withdrawing from the console thing for this year, they totally make sense. Like, I totally see where you're coming from for that. But for me, man.
I mean, the hardest part about it, really, for me is, I mean, again, as somebody who bought a fucking Vita, when it was new, is just being able to step away from buying the new shiny. But that's honestly the hardest part of it.
Yeah. I'm surprised you don't have a 3DS. Or do you have a 3DS, but not
I have a 3DS. I don't have the XL.
Yeah. XL's...
No, we bought a 3DS like on launch day.
I'd probably stick to the 3DS. I don't know. Have a look at the XL. But yeah, so remote play is awesome. Japan's getting the PS4 last. Xbox didn't really have any showing at TGS. Anything else we want to talk about in terms of news? And Valve is having that event, but we talked about that earlier in the show. Is that it for the show? Anything else? Are we done? Well, Durin dropped, so I guess that is it for the show. Perfect timing. Yeah, so thanks for listening to the Scotch House this week. I believe Thurbleton's plug was superhotgame.com. Let me just double check that. My plug is shipit2.com, which is that service I mentioned earlier, which is for people that are outside the States who want stuff from the States. My second would be there is a book that's coming out later this week by Brandon Sanderson called Steelheart. Anyone out there who's a fan of young adult fantasy, and not talking about fucking... Well, they'll probably be the usual high school drama stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if there was. But it's just younger actors playing a epic fantasy role. It's looking to be very, very good. He's my favorite author, so obviously I'm excited for it. But if you're interested in someone who helped finish The Wheel of Time, has pretty much every single one of his books are rated above 4 stars out of 5 on Goodreads, with a lot of them being the 4.6 to 4.7 range. One of the best fantasy authors currently living. His latest book coming out the day after this podcast goes up, I think it's September 24th. Audible version until September 26th. So that's it. So Steelheart. Let me just make sure. Super hot. Yep, superhotgame.com and Ship It 2 are our plugs this week. So thanks for listening. I'm all off kilter here since I'm the only one here and I haven't ended the show alone before. And goodbye.